supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Bill Cosby was in court again today for a hearing in advance of his sexual assault trial set to start in June. WHYY's Laura Benchoff was in Montgomery County and joins us live on the line with the latest. Laura, what was the purpose of today's hearing?
Hi, Dave. So the hearing today was to hash out some requests by the defense to exclude certain types of evidence and a response by district attorneys to include that evidence. The types of evidence they were looking at were things Cosby had said both in civil depositions and in some of his comedy and in his writings about giving drugs to women before sex. The other thing on the table was to try to nail down some specifics about jury selection. As you might remember, the defense successfully argued to have the jury drawn from Allegheny County, not Montgomery County, where the trial is going to take place, because they could get a bigger jury pool out in the Pittsburgh area. Defense attorneys also asked today to be able to mail a questionnaire about media bias to potential jurors. That was basically what was covered top to bottom, and I can tell you not a lot of things were decided. For the first thing, for the certain types of evidence, you know, no decision was made. Both sides argued passionately, and they now have another 15 days to submit any other motions or briefs. What did come out of today's hearing was some more details about the trial. The court wants to start jury selection at the end of May, that jurors will not be allowed to talk to the press during the trial, and that the judge said the trial itself could take as little as 2 weeks. And on the question of jury selection, you know, even though the defense did ask for this questionnaire and they made a strong case about why they believe that media bias should be weeded out at the first instance or first contact with jurors, judge said he wasn't going to change the standard questionnaire that goes out in the mail. Although the judge, Judge Stephen O'Neill, did say that both sides would have input when it came to sit down with potential jurors about what exact questions should be asked them at that time.
So, Laura, based on what did and did not come out of today's hearing, can we expect to see more of Cosby before his June 5th trial?
We can. This was supposed to be the last appearance before the trial, but because there are more questions unresolved, Judge Stephen O'Neill did say to expect another hearing.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY's Laura Benchoff. Today, former Philadelphia District Attorney Lynn Abraham went to court to try and force DA Seth Williams out of office. Williams is under a federal corruption indictment and has given up his law license, but says he'll stay in office while fighting the charges. Abraham's suit charges that Williams cannot legally hold the office without being a licensed attorney. Meanwhile, the Democratic primary for District Attorney of Philadelphia is 6 weeks from tomorrow, and there are seven candidates in the field with no clear favorite. One thing that could make a difference would be the emergence of super PACs, political committees that can accept big contributions and spend as much as they want, so long as they don't coordinate with the candidate that they support. WHYY's Dave Davies has this look at the prospect of big spenders entering the race and steps the city ethics board has taken to regulate them.
For more than 20 years, he's been one of Philadelphia's most progressive voices. He's Jim Kenney.
That ad from the mayor's race 2 years ago didn't come from Jim Kenney's campaign, but from a super PAC that actually spent more than Kenney's campaign itself. In fact, in the mayor's race, two-thirds of all the spending came from independent committees. Will that happen in the DA's race? There's no sign of it yet, and veteran analyst Larry Seisler says there's a reason for that.
It is very difficult to raise money for a DA's race to begin with.
A mayor affects all kinds of policy and thus attracts lots of special interests and their money. The DA prosecutes cases. But a super PAC funded by liberal billionaire George Soros has been investing in DA's elections around the country, supporting candidates interested in decreasing prison populations. He's said to be looking at the Philadelphia contest. Most of the Democratic field leans that way, so it's not clear whether the group will want to pick one from the PAC. But there's a buzz in the political world that he likes civil rights attorney Larry Krasner. Then there are the unions, in particular the building trades. There's no obvious reason for them to want to pick the next DA, but Seisler says they always want to be relevant.
In Philadelphia, unions are almost like their own political party. You know, they're the driving force, or one of a few driving forces, you know, in the Democratic Party, and they want to be relevant in the political discourse.
If super PACs do weigh in on the DA's race with big spending, they'll find there are more rules to follow here than in most cities and states, and certainly more than in federal elections. The City Ethics Board has imposed new regulations designed to shine more light on super PAC operations and prevent coordination between super PACs and candidates. In federal elections, campaigns will regularly post attractive video of their candidates on YouTube, knowing that friendly super PACs will download it and use it in commercials, executing an end run around the ban on coordination. City Ethics Board Director Shane Creamer says a super PAC is prohibited from doing that in a Philadelphia election.
If you want to use video, you're going to have to make your own video, and you can't get it from the candidate either directly or indirectly or with the consent of the candidate through any kind of third-party source.
And the board has imposed new reporting requirements. Instead of operating in the shadows for much of the race, super PACs will have to file complete financial reports 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, and 1 week before the primary election, which happens May 16th. I'm Dave Davies, WHYY News.
At 6:10, the Phillies are up 4-1 over the Reds in their season opener in Cincinnati this afternoon. And for a big picture look at the year ahead for the Phils, let's turn now to Philadelphia Daily News sports columnist Marcus Hayes. Marcus, thanks for being back with us.
It's always a pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Marcus, with the second youngest roster in Major League Baseball, safe to say the makeup of this team will evolve greatly over the course of a 162-game long season.
It's an interesting situation they find themselves in. They certainly should evolve, but you kind of know what you have for a change. For the first time in two or three years, you know you have an all-star in Odubel Herrera who could be even better than he is, because you forget he was converted from an infielder 2 years ago, and he's playing at an elite level in center field now. You have Michael Franco, who seems to have been around for a long time, but he only has one full season. Whether he was a call-up or injured his first couple of seasons, he's had one full season, and parts of it were rocky, which is what you expect. You have Cesar Hernandez, who's 26 years old and might be the most consistent player from last season. He had a really good second half to match his first half. He's fast. He's got a great on-base percentage as a leadoff hitter last year, better than Jimmy Rollins ever had. So you kind of know what you have to a degree at some spots, but all of them need to, number one, do it again, and number two, do it better for the team to even really be viable.
You know, they showed an 8-game improvement this past season over the previous year. They do that again, and they're getting pretty close to 500.
Well, I got to tell you, if they reach 500, not unlike Brett Brown of the Sixers, who should be rewarded for an atrocious record, Pete Mackanin should be rewarded for a mediocre record, because this really is a 75-win team when you look at the starting rotation especially, and the bullpen, which has to reprove itself. But these guys, these Phillies, certainly are part of a very interesting process. And if things break right, they have even more coming. They have a ton of talent at AAA this year as far as lineup guys. And they have a ton of talent at Class A ball as far as arms. They've got two 98-mile-an-hour fastball guys going to be playing in Clearwater this year. So
one of the very best farm teams in the majors, would you say?
Probably in the top four or five. The Yankees are, you know, they're rated number one. But the Phillies, in part because of the Cole Hamels trade, are, you know, somewhere between two and five, yeah.
Mackanin, he with the calm and confident demeanor, is he the right manager at the right time for this team?
He has been, but I don't think you're going to see that calm demeanor be super calm this year, because I believe that he sees this as not only a make-or-break year for a lot of his players who need to take a step forward and need to put a priority on winning and winning the correct way, but it's a make-or-break year for him too. He's only had one full season as a manager in the major leagues at the age of 65, and he's in a lame duck year. They haven't extended his contract. They hold an option for him. They haven't picked it up. I think they're negotiating for an extension, but I don't know if they think that he's the right man for the job, because they didn't hire him. Matt Klentak did not hire Pete Mackanin.
You alluded to Cole Hamels. He was one of the last of the veterans who we shipped out. When will the tide turn the other way, meaning when will the Phillies organization be attractive enough to the very best free agents to consider coming here?
It's got to be two seasons from now, in part because of the starting pitching. They don't really have anything better than a number three starter among their young pitchers at this point. But really, they've got three high average bats in the minors, and they have a pair of Bash brothers at AAA, and Dylan Cousin and Rhys Hoskins. He's a wonderful player. I would expect Rhys Hoskins to be the guy among the prospects that does the most over the next 3 or 4 years. So there's just so much talent that was in and around the roster this year that I think some of the guys who are on the roster this year are looking over their shoulders and saying, hey, look what's coming.
Hey, too soon to consider playoffs, let alone World Series. So with that, Washington and New York Mets are probably safely ahead of us. Can we leapfrog over Miami, who is next above us?
That should be the goal for this season, to become the team that nobody really wants to play, because anybody could lose a series if you have the wrong rotation, you're the wrong part of your rotation, or you have a hitter or two hurt. The Phillies should be dangerous enough to win as many series as they lose.
Marcus, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
It's always a pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Philadelphia Daily News columnist Marcus Hayes. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. As part of an occasional series, our Keystone Crossroads reporters are answering your questions about Pennsylvania. Elliot Adler from Philadelphia was wondering about the cameras and sensors he sees along the highway.
My question is, what are these sensors doing, how are they doing it, and what, if any, information are they storing?
Keystone Crossroads' Eleanor Klibanoff hit the road to investigate and found that the sensors outside the car are the least of our worries.
To answer Adler's question, I drove from State College, where I live, to Harrisburg, where the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is headquartered. Along the drive, I started to notice things I'd never seen before.
Oh, look, there's one right up there on the pole. It's the camera that he's talking about. It's like an egg shape, or like an eye almost, watching me. It's a little freaky, I'll be honest.
My concern only grew when I got to the Regional Traffic Control Center in Harrisburg. There, feeds from a portion of PennDOT's 900 cameras were streaming onto a wall of screens. These feeds are monitored 24/7, 365 days a year, by traffic control specialists like Marcus LaManna.
All of our cameras have pan, tilt, zoom, 360 degrees, so I can flip a camera, look to the northbound side, or we can zoom in really good if I want to look out far on the bridge.
And it's not just LaManna. Anyone can watch a version of these feeds online, and PennDOT has video sharing agreements with other state agencies, news channels, and law enforcement groups. Staring at this wall of screens showing cameras I had just recently driven under, I was beginning to feel a little surveilled. Then I talked to Doug Tomlinson, PennDOT's Director of Traffic Management.
We don't know anything about any of the drivers that are in these vehicle streams. We don't care about any of the drivers in the vehicle streams. I'm trying to understand what are the conditions on the roadway so that we can do something to make traffic flow better.
The cameras are like 900 eyes on the ground to help PennDOT move traffic more efficiently around the state. Tomlinson says the footage is recorded over immediately, no one can record the feeds permanently, and these cameras aren't sharp enough to read license plate numbers. But that's just PennDOT. Across the Commonwealth, cities, state agencies, and private companies are working together to use cameras to collect tolls, catch red light runners, and help control smart traffic lights. Those cameras create a lot of data, which researchers are hoping to use to make transit safer, faster, and more efficient. And when they do collect driver-level information, everyone involved promises not to misuse it. When I told that to Sasha Meinrath, he used an 8-letter word I can't put on the radio. Meinrath is a telecommunications professor at Penn State and an internet privacy activist.
A developer that says we're going to put X camera into this thing and that's all we're going to do, and we're going to forego anything else that might collect data that could be commercialized later, is not living in the real world.
And commercialization isn't Meinrath's worst fear. That would be the possibility, or he says guarantee, of all that data being abused. A company could change hands, laws could loosen, or there could be a data breach. But if that's a concern for you, consider the information you are already willingly giving away by using GPS apps like Google Maps or Waze. PennDOT has a deal with a third-party aggregator to get all the data you're giving and getting from those apps. Here's Doug Tomlinson, PennDOT's traffic guy again.
Instead of having to put equipment out every mile or half mile, we can now work with a private company and understand literally in minute increments everything that's going on every stretch of road across the Commonwealth.
I asked Elliot Adler, the original poser of the question, whether this information would make him stop using GPS apps. He said, probably not.
And it becomes like so ingrained in your life that you need Google Maps to survive, basically. You know, you can't get anywhere without it.
As for me, when I left PennDOT, I decided to keep my phone off and my whereabouts to myself. It took me three times as long, but I eventually found my way back to the highway. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
The game was in Dallas. The winning team was from the Deep South. But there were a lot of smiling faces in North Philly last night when the University of South Carolina won its first ever national championship in women's basketball. The Gamecocks were led by Coach Dawn Staley, a North Philly native and a giant among the city's basketball legends. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Aaron went back to Stanley's stomping grounds the day after her triumph.
This is my treasure.
For more than three decades, Cheryl Hardy has run the Hank Gathers Rec Center in North Philly. The walls of her office are plastered with pictures of stars who've passed through this legendary gym. But no one has more wall space than Dawn Staley.
I show them all. That's our prodigy. That's Dawn.
Staley later became a phenom at nearby Dobbins Tech and won three Olympic gold medals as a member of Team USA. Until Sunday, only one major honor had eluded her, a college basketball national championship.
I just feel so truly blessed to be able to see her accomplished the last goal, and she's not finished. Believe me, she's not finished. That's just the beginning for her.
Perhaps there would be no beginning if not for another North Philly institution. Staley never wanted to become a coach, but in 2000, then-athletic director Dave O'Brien convinced her to take the head job at Temple. Lee Roberts, who runs facilities and event management for the athletic department, remembers keeping the court prepped for Staley's impromptu pickup games.
Before Coach's knees started bothering her, she would be out here playing pickup. You better come to play. You better put the sneaks on tight because Coach was going to play and play hard.
All right.
Less than 24 hours after South Carolina's win, city officials kicked off a major renovation project at Dobbins Tech, Staley's alma mater. As the sledgehammer swung and demolition began, it was hard to ignore the poetry. A wall was coming down in North Philly, just as the neighborhood's most famous daughter had broken through her last barrier. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
The moon takes a leisurely 27 days or so to complete a lap around the Earth. Well, now let's consider a star a mere 2.5 times further away from its companion that orbits every 28 minutes. Let's prepare for wind burn with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute.
That's an incredibly high rate of speed, especially considering the mass of the objects we're talking about. One of the components actually is a black hole. And this is a good deal of what's driving what's going on here because we have the binary star component that's orbiting this black hole at that incredible rate of speed. And that's just unbelievable.
And if it's so close to that black hole, why doesn't it get swallowed up?
So that's a really great question because you would think that anything that gets close to the black hole is going to get sucked in. But here we have a situation where that very, very high speed of rotation is constantly throwing the star out away from the black hole while the gravitational pull of the black hole is holding that star in orbit around that common point of gravity.
I've learned from you that our star is an anomaly to the extent that it's a single. Most stars apparently show up in these so-called binary pairs. But how unusual is it for a star's companion to be a black hole rather than a second star?
Well, it all depends on how these stars were formed, what kind of families they were formed in, and if they had, let's say, big brothers or big sisters nearby that they formed with. Well, then that would be an inevitability that bigger brother or bigger sister is going to convert over into the black hole, and then the sibling, the smaller star, is going to become enmeshed with that larger brother like that, the black hole.
There's new understanding of how stars are formed.
Yes, because it's in association with black holes, and we typically think of black holes as being very destructive. Stars get too close, they get torn apart, the material gets flung down onto the accretion disk of the black hole. The material spins around the accretion disk, warms up, and is often radiated away in jets that squirt out along the rotational axis of this, carrying that material with them. Well, astronomers thought that it was possible that stars could form in those jets. But those jets blasting away from black holes, in some instances, have been reported to be moving as fast as 94 million miles per hour.
Excuse me.
I wish I could even frame that in a way that made sense, other than to say, in and of itself, could be seen as destructive, particularly when we're looking at a cloud of gas and dust. And remember, when we say cloud of gas and dust in space, we're talking about hydrogen gas, so it's extremely tenuous to begin with. Now we're going to introduce, on top of that, this incredibly high-velocity jet blasting out of a black hole. So it's indeed unusual that astronomers have been able to see now the signature of young stars in these jets.
Here's an example where science advances sometimes linearly, other times in fits and starts. And apparently the first supernova was observed in 1604 and then not until centuries later.
Well, that was the first supernova seen with human eyes in 1604. And this most recent one, 1987. Here we're talking about an event in which a star explodes. It's reached the end of its life, its standard life, and it explodes. And it explodes with such incredible force that the brightness allows it to be seen even during the day for weeks.
Was that the description in 1604?
It definitely was. I mean, the records that have been kept on this, which are not prolific, definitely indicate that this star was visible during the day without any problem at all.
What else could possibly be seen overhead during the day?
Well, it's a challenge, but not only can you see the moon during the day, of course, as we all know, but Venus can also be seen during the day, naked eye, without telescopic aid. But that's about the end of it. But in this particular case, these exploding stars have made themselves visible here on Earth to naked eye observers during the day. So there's a tremendous amount of energy being released there.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Philadelphians turn to 311, the city's non-emergency contact center, to find out when trash is collected or how to request services such as pothole repair or removal of an abandoned car. But you may not know what happens between the time when you call and when the problem is addressed. We're inviting Tim Thornton, director of Philly 311, to join us on Newsworks Tonight this Friday to field your questions about the history and purpose of the department, its range of services, and improvements to customer feedback. You can join the conversation by calling our comment line at 484-800-1311. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.